still here in Toronto, and it's a cloudy, overcast day today, Friday. I'm looking forward to going back to Hungary Monday evening, and I'm going to be answering a few questions that I located from way back when, some of them going back as far as December of last year. I hope I haven't answered these, but if I have, then please excuse me. This one is from Haller Dardas. This is the one that goes back to December, and he says, in a lecture I was listening to today, I heard Srila Prabhupada say that it is everyone's duty to take sannyas and renounce worldly life regardless of varna. This was in relation to a Srimad Bhagavatam verse describing Yudhisthira Maharaja's taking sannyas. However, I've also previously heard and read that in terms of the varnashram system, Shudras undergo only grihastha ashram, Vaishyas brahmacharya and grihastha kshatriyas ashram up to vanaprastha, and only Brahmins, all four ashrams up to sannyas. Could you please reconcile the apparent contradiction? How should devotees in ISKCON approach ashram in the present age? Halandar Prabhu's understanding of which varna accepts which ashram is correct. But we must keep in mind that's for an age where there are very clear delineations in the qualities that people possess, and you can really say that here is a Kshatriya, here is a Vaishya, here is a Brahmana. In Kali Yuga, Shastra states Kalo Shudra Sambhavan, our qualities are more akin to those of Shudras or even lower. And therefore what we find is that we have certain characteristic traits which are brahminical, which are administrative, and so on. And because of the lack of clarity of varnas, whether someone takes the renounced sort of life is an individual case. We see that Srila Prabhupada encouraged young men to take to the renounced order of life, although in too many cases they weren't able to maintain their vows of celibacy. And partly that has to do with the fact that devotees were not brahminical enough. Here the reference is to a somewhat different type of sannyas, a sannyas that's different than accepting, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did, sannyas in one's youth, and to what I'd made reference to earlier. This is sannyas when devotees become older, when they naturally reach the age when they should give up the world. And I would say that in that case, Srila Prabhupada's reference to sannyas, particularly because it's made in connection with Yudhisthira Maharaj, is the principle of sannyas. Anashita karma palam karyam karam karoti asa sannyasi cha yogi cha. The essence of sannyas, which is to actually give up fruit of activities and dedicate one's life to Krishna. I make reference here to Yudhisthira Maharaj because technically Yudhisthira Maharaj didn't take sannyas. I remember quite some years ago in Los Angeles speaking with the artist who's painting the picture of Yudhisthira Maharaj walking off into the Himalayas. And he said that originally he painted the picture with Yudhisthira Maharaj carrying a tree dandi. And when Srila Prabhupada said that, he said it's not correct. Yudhisthira Maharaj didn't take to the renounced order of life in that sense, but rather he just accepted within himself the principle of renunciation and left for the Himalayas. So from what I understand here, Haladhar Prabhu, the synthesis of all of this is that all devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement, however they've conducted their lives, whether they've been businessmen or whether they've been administrators, whether they've worked perhaps as pujaris, that at a certain stage of life they need to reconfirm their full commitment to devotional service to Lord Krishna and bring to an end the day-to-day struggle for working hard in some kind of occupation that isn't directly related to Krishna. and allowing much of their time to be taken up by work, family obligations, and so on. Everyone's duty is to become free from the desire for fruitive work and to devote all of their time to the service of the Lord. That is how I would understand what was being stated here. Dandakrit asks a question about charity. Could you explain what is the correct thing to do for a beggar in a holy dime, beggars outside the dime, leaving tips, example, taxi, hotel, porter, restaurant? Do different ashrams respond differently to these situations? I personally like to give to beggars, both in and out of the dam. The primary preference is to give prasadam. I always encourage devotees, particularly in Hungary, to always have some little packaged prasadam, whether it's sweets or a mixture of raisins and nuts, in their car, and whenever they're approached by beggars, to just give that. Distributing prasadam is the best type of charity, because beggars always beg to feed themselves, so better give them food, and what a better type of food to give than to give prasadam. As far as giving tips for taxi drivers, hotel porters, restaurants, some of these references raise the question of why would someone be necessarily going to a hotel, restaurant, and so on. But in the case that devotees who are doing business do that, or say, for instance, someone may be staying at a guest house, as in the case when I go to Rishikesh, I would then whatever is customary in recognition for some services that were rendered by room cleaners and so on is acceptable. Going back again to giving charity to beggars, Srila Prabhupada also had stated that we can give people in the dam, beggars, money, those who don't come chasing after you, but those who quietly sit in a place. I often take change in my pocket and like to give just a rupee or two, particularly when you see lepers in Puri and so on. We Westerners spend such extraordinary amounts of money coming and going to India, what to speak of residing there, giving a little amount of that without any expectation of remuneration or recognition is appropriate. And this was back in January. Pujarini Devidasi is asking from Shri Bhakti Chittamani, quote, if for some valid reason one has no access to pure devotees, purification and perfection can be achieved solely by reading, provided one has Krishna's special grace. Could you please explain what Krishna's grace means and in what way can we perceive it? I have moved to Basel from London and along I have access to senior Vaishnavas. Grace will mean that one gets the result of one's devotional efforts. Krishna says, Yoga Kshema Bahami Aham Andadami Buddhi Yogam Tham. He can act as the association from within the heart in the case where devotees are bereft of the association of Vaishnavas, which is an essential aspect of Krishna consciousness. The fact that Krishna does act will be the evidence of his special grace, and the fact that Krishna acts as our association can be perceived by feeling his presence in terms of his instructions, in terms of visualizing his deity form, and in terms of one's ongoing strengthening of one's Krishna consciousness. To practice Krishna consciousness alone in a solitary place is not possible unless one is actually getting Krishna's grace. So if one is going from strength to strength in one's devotional activities and simultaneously carrying on one's regular duties, then one must be getting Krishna's mercy. And obviously, the easiest way of getting Krishna's mercy is through chanting the holy name of the Lord, is that Krishna is giving extra strength and encouragement to devotees who are now exclusively dependent upon him, because by circumstance, they don't even have the association of Vaishnavas. Here is Manjari Devi Dasi saying that in the ninth canto, read the story of Subhari Rishi, who was engaged in austerity deep in the water of the river Jamuna, when he saw a pair of fish engaged in sexual affairs. Thus he perceived the pleasure of sex life, and induced by this desire, he married the 50 daughters of King Mandata. Vishwa Chakravarti Thakur remarks that Subhari Muni had fallen from his austerity because of Vaishnava Aparad, having offended Garuda. Does this mean that it was due to Subhari Rishi's offense that seeing the fishes awakened his sexual desires, otherwise it wouldn't have affected him? Yes. Yes, Subhari Muni had offended a great Vaishnava. When you commit offenses to a Vaishnava, you lose Krishna's shelter. Losing Krishna's shelter means that you again become a victim of the temptations of the material energy. Primarily, sex life is that main temptation. One would not expect that one becomes excessively agitated by seeing two fish together, but even that can be the cause of fall down for someone who's offended a Vaishnava, and that was Subhari Rishi's fall down. So we should be very careful. We should be very careful about committing offenses to Vaishnavas, not only because we know what the consequence is, but because we will lose Krishna's favor. We become unwanted by the society of Vaishnavas, as was the case of Ramachandra Puri. And technically speaking, by committing such aparads, one becomes an avaishnava. Therefore, we become the very antithesis of that which we wanted to be by coming to Krishna consciousness. So, better to be extremely careful in that regard, especially in this day and age of free speech. Everyone has the right to say anything about anyone, and modern communication methods make that very easily available, free communication. So the main symptom of committing Vaishnava Parad is that one's advancement in devotional service will be stunted, and one will become subject to allurements of the material energy and attraction to members of the opposite sex. All right, I think that covers all the questions. Hare Krishna.